Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. Hopefully you are staying safe. Happy health to you and yours. It is The Drive. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will be joined by Dr. Dana Hawkinson. He is an infection disease physician at the University of Kansas Health System. We want to give you guys as much information as we can about the coronavirus. So Dr. Dana Hawkinson will be on the show coming up after the hits. We'll also get into the mind of the machine in the 5 o'clock hour. We got a lot to get to. Let's get to it, my man.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
Go. Our first hit, earlier today on Fesco in the Morning, Mitch Holthus was on, and he was able to identify the moment very specifically where he knew Mahomes was special.
I remember 17 training camp. It's his first training camp in St. Joe. He's apprenticing, right? Alex is training, and Mahomes is just soaking it in. He's absorbing everything. But he makes a play. They're running red zone. I'm right behind the play in the end zone. And he makes a phenomenal play on a bootleg where he's got a tight window. I go, he's not going to throw that, is he? And he throws it in like a six-inch window. Well, there's this grove of trees, as you know, at St. Joe, behind the northwest part. I just take off of this grove of trees and walk around for like 5 minutes going, what did I just see? Because I've not seen that in any of my brief 20-some years as the voice of the Chiefs. And I walk back up the hill thinking, we've got a chance. Short-term and long-term future here.
That was Mitch's moment. You boys, what was the exact moment that you knew Patrick Mahomes was special?
My answer to this question would be the throw that he made in the first home game that he played against the San Francisco 49ers. I just think about the physical ability it would take to make a play like that. And I don't think there's too many quarterbacks currently in the NFL or in the history of the NFL that could make that play. It wasn't just the elusiveness to avoid the rush and to keep his balance. It wasn't just the throw. It was when you combine all of those plays at one time. I don't know if you can really show somebody a more physically imposing quarterback than Patrick Mahomes was on that one individual play. Of all the throws that he's made so far in his career, I still think that's the best one that he's made. So for me, the answer of what moment do I realize that Mahomes was special, I would say it was in his first home game against the San Francisco 49ers.
If you ask five different Chiefs fans what's the best throw that Pat's made, some of them will probably say the throw that you just said. Some will probably say the left-handed throw. Some will say the no-look pass. Some will say the couple of passes that he connected with Tyreek Hill against the Baltimore Ravens. There's no wrong answer to that question. When I knew that Pat was the real deal, not just a highlight machine, it didn't take that long. So the first game that we saw him when he finally got the reins, on the road, division opponent against the Chargers, 6.5-point underdog, and all he does is throws 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, leads the team to victory. A lot of people went, okay, hot start. What are you going to do now? And then he goes on the road, other coast, future Hall of Fame quarterback, conference opponent, and throws 6 touchdowns and no interceptions against Ben Roethlisberger. And at that point, Rob, I don't think anybody could deny that he was at least on the path for greatness. And now that he's been an MVP and played in a Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl and been a Super Bowl MVP, I think all that's in the rearview mirror.
Earlier today on the show, Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports joined us. He gave us an idea of how the Chiefs should approach an extension with Patrick Mahomes.
You know, I think as far as Mahomes goes, he's a blank check guy. You say, all right, Tyler, call what you want. There's no haggling here. It's just how much does he desire, reasonably, I guess, and Kansas City Chiefs just say, sure, here you go. I mean, there's no other option there. You got to resign him. So it's going to be a record setter, and he deserves it. If he wants to set a record, maybe he wants to go to Brady route, I don't know. But if he wants to have the highest contract in NFL history, he's going to get the highest contract in NFL history, and it's well-deserved.
Mahomes and Watson will always be tied together because of that draft. They will both need extensions in similar time periods. Would you like to see the Chiefs set the market there, or would you like to see the Chiefs wait for Watson's number and react?
That's a really interesting question. I'd probably rather have the Chiefs set the market because I think that Deshaun Watson might actually have more leverage than Mahomes. And no way am I saying that Deshaun Watson is the quarterback that Patrick Mahomes is. But I just think about right now when it comes to the public sentiment in Houston and how they feel about their front office and how they feel about their general manager slash head coach, it's a way different situation. And if you are Deshaun Watson, the kind of control that you can have over the organization might be greater than any player we've seen in recent memory. Like, if I'm Deshaun Watson, my play would be let Patrick Mahomes get his $200 million and then walk in there and say, I want 205 and I'm not playing until we get it. And let's see who wins the public PR battle between Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien in Houston, Texas. I think it's pretty clear who's going to win that battle. So I think that Watson could potentially have more leverage. If I'm the Chiefs, I probably get out in front of it and I try to get this deal done sooner rather than later, understanding that things have changed in the world. But if I'm the Chiefs, I try to get this deal done between now and the draft.
Yeah, Watson can have leverage with Houston if he wants it, but why would he want anything to do with Houston when there's alternatives? His GM's Bill O'Brien, his coach is Bill O'Brien. His starting running back is David Johnson. He no longer has DeAndre Hopkins. They blew a 24-point lead in the postseason. Like, it's stale, right? It's Groundhog Day. They're not going anywhere in his current situation, which is why I think that there's an actual possibility that he could be a Patriot. If he upsets the apple cart, if he says, I'm going to sit out and I won't play, talking about Deshaun Watson this year, next year, if he's so pissed off with the situation in Houston that he talks his way out, ends up in New England, that's a scary thought from Chiefs fans' perspective, because I think Deshaun Watson's the second-best young quarterback in football, but I've never seen him as a real threat because of his head coach. If all of a sudden his head coach is Bill Belichick, that changes the story.
Three. Nick Wilson, who does middays in Charlotte, joined us earlier on the show, talking about Cam Newton, who was cut earlier today. He says this will be the market if he goes the backup route.
I happen to think he would be the most he would be willing to accept in terms of potential backup roles would be a, you're going to come in and compete for the job. I think Cam, I listen, and rightfully so, I think he still thinks of himself as a starter, but not for the injuries. I would be shocked if he just ended up in Buffalo as the backup with no spot, or in Baltimore and Kansas City, name a spot where he wasn't given an opportunity to challenge for a starting job.
I think Cam and Jameis have similar markets in the fact they don't appear to have starting quarterback markets, but only backup rehab options. Can you guys explain to me why there's no starting quarterback market for these two?
I feel like it's unfair to Cam Newton to lump him and Jameis Winston in the same category. I don't think anyone is denying if Cam Newton can play or not. It's solely a health thing. If Cam Newton is fully healthy, then I fully expect him to be a starter next year in the NFL. I'm not sure if that's what Jameis is at this point. His decision-making has just been so poor, and he's got to get the stench of 30 interceptions off. Think about it. Whatever team that Jameis goes to is going to be a worse situation. You're not going to have the offensive mind that Bruce Arians is. You're not going to have a all-pro type tight end in O.J. Howard, and you're not going to have two of the top 20 wide receivers in the NFL. So last year's numbers were simply not realistic for Jameis Winston, and he threw 30 interceptions. To me, he's got to get that stench off of him, that if I'm Jameis Winston, to me, it's in my best interest to sign a one-year deal, go to a team with an established veteran quarterback, a team like Pittsburgh, and then if something happens to Ben Roethlisberger, you can step in and be a starter for a couple of games and kind of rehabilitate your image. I don't think Cam needs to rehabilitate his image. I think Jameis does.
No, I'm with you there. I think that if you get Jameis Winston, you know what you're getting, a guy that's probably going to throw 25 or 30 interceptions and not manage the ball very well. If you get Cam Newton, it could be boom or bust. He could turn into ashes. He could be Ben Roethlisberger and get hurt a couple of weeks into the season, or we've seen a lot of reclamation projects that turn out to be a good move. So I'm surprised that somebody is not interested in Cam Newton as their starter, especially when you're talking about a team like New England and a team like the Chargers that right now don't seemingly have a better option. Now, if you're talking about a Jacksonville with Gardner Minshew or Miami and they draft Tua, I actually think that the problem for Cam Newton there is he's overqualified for the position. He's too good to be a backup because that would create a quarterback controversy. But if he goes to New England, if he goes to the Chargers, there is no other quarterback there to create the controversy.
That concludes the hits for today. Let's go to the phone lines right now. Very happy to be joined by our next guest. He is Dr. Dana Hawkinson. He is an infection disease physician at the University of Kansas Health System. Dr. Hawkinson, really appreciate you coming on today.
Hi. Good afternoon.
No, appreciate it. Let's start with this. There is a current stay-at-home order in the Kansas City metro area. What are you expecting to see with the stay-at-home order?
Overall, you know, around the region, we are hoping and expecting to see people abide by that, adhere to the public health guidance, stay home so that we can flatten the curve. I think people are really familiar with that, and really try to slow or stop the spread of this coronavirus infection.
When we talk about flattening the curve, we had Mayor Lucas on yesterday, and I asked him what would he deem as successful with the stay-at-home order. From the scientific side of it, what would you guys deem as a success over the next couple of weeks, couple of months as we have the stay-at-home order?
You know, we really would like, number one, for people to be well. If we can stop further infections, stop our most vulnerable populations from getting infected and having severe complications. But it's also, we don't want to overrun or overwhelm our health systems, our hospital beds, our ventilators. And that's really kind of what we're looking to do.
Doctor, there's such a state of paranoia going on, not right now just in Kansas City or in the country, but really in the entire world. It's unprecedented. Mm-hmm. How do people know when they've got the actual symptoms of the COVID-19 versus just making themselves nervous?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anxiety is a very big part of this for sure, but it is a real infection. It does really make people ill. And while the probability of getting severe disease certainly increases if you're older, young people are affected as well. So we really need to make sure that we're are taking our responsibility to prevent this. But the anxiety is, how do I know if I'm sick? Because there's anxiety about being around people. There's anxiety about, what if I get an infection? There's anxiety about, if I get the infection, am I going to die? You know, it's hard to tell. We are certainly getting out of our normal respiratory viral season, where there's other known coronaviruses, which, you know, cause simple cough and cold. There's rhinovirus. There's influenza. And while influenza activity is still high around the nation and here around Kansas City, the other viruses have seemed to kind of dwindle off, probably, as they do in most years. So if you have a cough or a sniffle, well, it's also allergy season. Mm-hmm. Some of those things are hard to tell, though allergies typically do not cause fever. So we know that there is community spread. We know that COVID is out there in the community and people are getting it. If you get symptoms, okay, take your own pulse. Please try to stay calm. Just judge how you feel. You're welcome to call your physician, ask for some guidance. If you think that you are getting worse and you are having worsening symptoms, such as worsening shortness of breath and it's harder to breathe, obviously call 911 or go to the emergency department, but please call ahead before you do. Otherwise, most of these infections are going to be able to be managed at home with fever reducer like Tylenol, fluids, and rest.
Right now, we're talking to Dr. Dana Hawkinson. He is an infection disease physician at the University of Kansas Health System. As you know, there's been a lot of talk about tests and how to go about getting tested for the coronavirus. Where are we at in maybe providing more tests for more Americans? Where are we at where if you feel like you potentially have it, what should you do to go get tested?
Yep. You know, currently, like you just stated, there has been a shortage of tests. Not only the test kits, but there's been a shortage of the testing supplies, so the swab that we take a sample from, but also the media that swab goes in as we transport it to get tested. Ultimately, yes, we would like everybody who has a concern or has symptoms to be tested so that we understand how prevalent it is in the community. We do know it's around. But at this point in time, we are unable to test everybody, and so we have to prioritize. Certainly, we want to prioritize our most sick patients, and those are typically the patients that are in the hospital. As we move further out in a week or two and supplies become more available and the testing capacity is able to be ramped up and testing sites aren't backlogged, we will be able to test more and more people, not only in the hospital, but on an outpatient basis as well. And so that's what we would ultimately like to do. It's just at this point, we aren't unable to do that for several of those reasons.
Couldn't you also, and I just thought of this when you were talking, be putting yourself at more risk? So if you're not sure that you have it, and then you go to a hospital emergency room in a room full of people that may or may not have it, mm-hmm. couldn't that actually be more risky than just staying at home and figuring out an alternative?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly you're at risk, you know, any time in the community because we know it is out there. And so certainly going to those places could potentially put you at risk because we have to understand that even when you do get a test, that test is for that point, that time point exactly. Mm. If you start developing symptoms 4, 5, 6 days down the road or different symptoms and they test you and it's positive, well, you may have gotten infected from the first test to the second. So that testing is only for that exact time point.
How do doctors avoid it? Because you're around this stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm. Very good hand hygiene. You know, certainly in the hospital, I've been asked this, do I think I'll get the infection? Probably, the way it's going. I hope not, because I practice good hand hygiene, and I try not to put my hands in my face, such as in my eyes, nose, and mouth. But at the hospital, we have very good PPE. We are taking the precautions. We have the training to do frequent hand washing, to wear the proper protective equipment in the proper instances. But when you're out in the community, it's a little bit different. Again, certainly, you know, we know that we touch our face sometimes 20, 30, 40 times an hour.
Mm.
And there are people who were never around sick people. There were people who were never in areas where it was known to have community spread, but they came down with the illness. Most likely, we think, through indirect contact with other surfaces and using that and contaminating their hands and putting in their eyes, nose, or mouth. And so if you can prevent that and use hand hygiene, whether alcohol gels and or hand washing with soap and water, and try to consciously make an effort not to be putting your hands in your face, I think you're going to really cut down on your risk of getting the disease.
Dr. Hawkinson, do you feel like the people of Kansas City are finally taking the coronavirus as seriously as they should?
I mean, it seems like it. You know, I try to go for walks at night and business districts, and, you know, everything is shut down. It's like a ghost town. You know, there aren't people out eating and drinking and at restaurants. And, you know, obviously it's bad for the economy. Nobody wants bad things, especially for the economy. Everybody, we want people to have jobs and to flourish. But right now, I think it seems as if everybody is really adhering to these mandates and these guidance and also these stay-at-home orders.
Right now, we're talking to Dr. Dana Hawkinson for a couple more minutes. Doctor, this is my last question. You talk about everybody in terms of citizens being on the same page. As a citizen, it's been kind of frustrating to see that I'm not sure if everybody in power is on the same page, whether it's the medicine side of it or the politician side of it. In your estimation, I think people are wondering how long is this going to be? If you had to guess, how long do you think that we need to stay in home in order to fight this disease?
Oh, man, that is a very good question. I don't think we know. I don't think it's going to be 2 weeks. I think we are looking at further time than that. I don't think we've hit our peak here. I know certainly in New York they felt that they don't necessarily or haven't necessarily hit their peak. And if they are, a lot of places around the region or around the country are a week to two behind them. That could certainly be true. With any luck, as we seem to be at this, you know, time point compared to New York, maybe we were able to put the shelter in place or the quarantine, the self isolation and the social distancing in place sooner. Maybe we will have flattened that curve as far as total number of infections, but I think over the next week or two we will have a better idea. I don't think we really know right now.
And that is Dr. Dana Hawkinson. He is an infection disease physician at the University of Kansas Health System. Dr. Hawkinson, really appreciate your time today. Really appreciate you answering our questions. Thanks a lot for coming on.
All right, thanks.
That is Dr. Dana Hawkinson, who is an infection disease physician at the University of Kansas Health System. Just as someone who has really tried to do as much reading as I can, as someone who's tried to educate myself on the coronavirus as much as possible, it really has been frustrating that I feel like no one is on the same page about this. And I understand that it is a fluid situation, as much as we've said that over the last couple of weeks, but no one really has the answer. But when I go on the internet and I see that they're talking about opening up Universal Studios on April 1st, well, hold on. How is the stay-at-home order 30 days in Kansas City, but a place like Disney that get people from all across the world and all across the country, they think they're going to be able to open in 1 week? Like, it just doesn't make any sense here, where I feel like this is one of those things, like, we got way too many opinions on this. Get a group of people that are solely dedicated to, they're not doing brain surgery right now. They're not doing other stuff. Their sole focus is trying to help us fight the coronavirus. And those are the people that we need to be listening to. And I don't feel like that's happening right now. Maybe that's my own personal soapbox, but that part has just been really frustrating. Like, in this sense, I think people are kind of looking for, who do we listen to, because our lives are so directly affected by what decisions are made over the next couple of weeks. And I don't really know if people know who to listen to. Like, I say the joke earlier about Dr. Fauci, like, that's who I've picked. Like, I think he knows and understands this stuff more than anybody else. So if it doesn't come from his mouth, I just simply don't really believe it when it comes to what's happened over the last couple of weeks.
I don't know who I was watching this morning. It was somebody important, I guess, because there were a bunch of people gathered, a bunch of microphones in his face. Maybe it was a CDC or the head of somebody or something. But the words that were coming out of his mouth, he literally said, I don't care who you are or where you are, make sure that you're distancing yourself at least 6 feet from every single person. And as he was saying that, there was like a panel of 10 people behind him that were basically locked arms. So you're right. There's a lot of mixed signals. You can't tell me to stay 6 feet away and then 4 feet behind you, 10 people that are 2 feet away from each other. I'm not good at math, but I know that's not 6 feet. So it is frustrating. It's also, and we keep saying this, it's so unprecedented and it's so big that I don't think we've ever dealt with this. Not the sports world, not the world, period. We've never dealt with this type of thing.
So we are happy to give you the balance between sports and the coronavirus. I understand that we need to be an escape during these times, but I also think it's our responsibility to use this platform to try to get you as much information as we can. So we appreciate people like Mayor Lucas coming on the show yesterday and Dr. Dana Hawkinson to answer our questions when it comes to fighting COVID-19. Coming up on the other side, we have more information about that coronavirus party in Kentucky. We definitively have an answer on what was happening in the coronavirus party. And Chris Harris went on the Ian Rappaport podcast. And I don't know if the Chiefs were a finalist. I'll explain it coming up. So Drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on the Drive. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll go inside the mind of the machine. I want to play this for you very quickly. Chris Harris went on Ian Rappaport's podcast. He mentioned the teams that were in the hunt to acquire his services. Notice he does not mention the Kansas City Chiefs.
It was kind of winding down to the Saints or the Eagles, and then they kind of popped up out of nowhere. And I felt that would be a great, even better fit for me.
Interesting, because I was, you know, I was thinking the Raiders or the Eagles. Did the Raiders get in the mix for you? Because I know they were looking at a bunch of different.
They definitely got in the mix with me. It's just me. It was just the fit with the Raiders. I know that they already had a nickel with Marcus Joyner, and that's where they wanted to. They made it clear to me that they wanted to keep him in there, and so it was just based off really just fit and knowing where I'm going to play.
So as far as you had the Eagles, and obviously they ended up trading for Darius Slay eventually. So tell me how it worked for you. I know you got Chauffee Fields as your agent now. Is he kind of going through breaking down, you know, which team is a better fit? Is it mostly about contract? Like, how did you end up kind of figuring out and deciding?
Oh, it's definitely about – it was both, trying to fit in both and where I was going to fit in within their defense, how they wanted to use me, and contract. So just really – find the perfect fit for us, and then we figure where I can go out there and excel. And I felt going back with my coach, my first coach that I had, in the NFL, Ron Miles. He's a great coach, great technician. And I feel like going back to him is going to definitely help me out the rest of my career.
So that was Chris Harris on the Ian Rappaport podcast talking about his free agent market. He did not mention the Kansas City Chiefs. I found that interesting because he talked about the Raiders, who basically wasn't a good fit because they already had a nickel corner in place. And I'm thinking about the Chiefs, and right now I don't think they have a nickel corner in place. If you want to argue Rashad Fenton is their nickel corner, sure, have at it. But right now they really only have two corners under contract, and that is Charvarius Ward and Rashad Fenton. It got me thinking from a money standpoint, if they're not in the market for Chris Harris's two-year, $17 million, only $7.5 guaranteed, are they even still in the running? Are they even still in the market for Bashaud Breeland? Or is that now a pipe dream at this point? Because at the cost and the fit, you would think that Chris Harris would make a lot of sense. And I certainly think there was interest from his side and his camp in wanting to come to Kansas City. I just hear that. I mean, he mentioned four teams, didn't mention the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm curious how far the negotiation and the process even came to Chris Harris when it came to him potentially joining the team.
Breeland is going to be looking for a long-term contract because it wasn't just last year, the year before also. So Green Bay said, go out there and prove it, and he kind of did. He got hurt, and then the next year he came to Kansas City and he overachieved. There's no way he's going to do that again, here or elsewhere, even if somebody says, well, we'll give you three times as much as you made. So he was making, what, $2 million, $3 million?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody said, we'll give you $9 million, he's going to be looking for a Kendall Fuller-type deal where he gets a 3 or 4 year contract and guarantees himself some real NFL money. So I don't think Breeland's going to come back. As far as the other cornerbacks go, we're seeing the writing on the wall. And I actually think you're just kind of being a little bit stubborn here because we can see what's happening, right? They're going to do the same thing they did last year, essentially. Charvarius Ward, Rashad Fenton, super cheap. You draft guys. They're not interested in a $10 million or even an $8 million cornerback like Chris Harris. Are the Chiefs in the cornerback market? Very much so. Are they in the $5 to $10 million cornerback range? No. If there's a guy out there they can get for a couple of million bucks, a reclamation project, they'll probably do it. If not, I'm telling you now, and I'll say it again, they're going to spend multiple draft picks in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that they were going to be in the one-year corner market, but I would say, I mean, Chris Harris's contract is basically a one-year contract. If you're making 2 years, $17 million, and you've only guaranteed $7.5 million, I would say that that is a glorified one-year deal when you look at how NFL contracts are put together. So I was on The Athletic, and they were doing one of their stories about the top free agents remaining and where they thought they would land. The two free agents they had Kansas City signing were Derek Wolfe, who played defensive tackle for the Broncos back when they won a Super Bowl. He's a 34-year-old. He'd be a one-year veteran-type deal, would certainly make a lot of sense. Their cornerback move was Tremaine Johnson. He played for the New York Jets. He was bad last year, but I think the hope would be you get him in the system. You sign him to a prove-it kind of bust, boomer-bust-type deal, Tremaine Johnson. They had DeMarcus Robinson signing a deal with the New York Jets. They had him signing a one-year deal, and they had Bashaud Breeland signing a contract with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville would actually make a lot of sense for Bashaud Breeland. No A.J. Bouye, they traded him to the Broncos. No Jalen Ramsey, obviously. I think Bashaud Breeland to Jacksonville would make a lot of sense, but that was the Athletic predictions when it came to the Chiefs. They had them signing Derek Wolfe and Tremaine Johnson to one-year deals, and they had DeMarcus Robinson landing with the New York Jets, who have no wide receivers to throw to.
I'm cool with that. I mean, it's some point in the secondary, you're just going to need warm bodies because, like you said, right now under contract, they've got two guys, Ward and Fenton, and that's the end of that story. So if you can get somebody in the secondary to plug in, even if it's not a starter, you need guys. The fact that DeMarcus Robinson's still out there for the taking surprises me a little bit. And if he is going to sign the one-year prove-it deal that you keep talking about with a bunch of different players, maybe Kansas City's the right place to do that. If we're calling Mecole Hardman the number two, and Sammy Watkins is gone, and we don't know that yet, but assuming that Sammy Watkins eventually is going to end up in a different uniform next season, then all of a sudden he could get more of an opportunity. There's not a better opportunity than an offense with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. If I'm DeMarcus Robinson, and the difference is, let's call it $500,000 somewhere else, or stay in Kansas City for a year and prove it, I think D-Rob might actually come back.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly a chance for him to come back. I'm looking at some of the other wide receiver contracts that have been signed in the NFL. Philip Dorsett just signed a one-year deal. Nelson Aguilar just signed a one-year deal. I think DeMarcus Robinson is going to probably have to end up signing the Nelson Aguilar deal. So he basically got $1 million as a base salary, and then he has a chance to kind of earn some incentives just based on the class that it comes to in draft when it comes to DeMarcus Robinson. And I think the top money is done. Maybe somebody gives him the same contract we just saw Robbie Anderson get, but there's no justification for giving Robbie Anderson 2 years and 20 and then giving DeMarcus Robinson 2 for $18 million or one of those kind of deals. I think that money is passed. I think DeMarcus Robinson's best case scenario is sign a $1 million, $2 million, $1 year, $3 million deal, play well, have a good season, and then test free agency when the wide receiver draft class isn't nearly going to be as strong as it was this year. A lot of times it's just situation and timing. You've brought that up a lot. I don't think the timing is very good for DeMarcus Robinson to get more than a one-year deal.
Oh, and I was never talking the Robbie Anderson type of money. What did he get today? 2 for $20 million?
2 for $20 million.
Yeah, I mean, well, DeMarcus Robinson is not worth $10 million a year. The only team that might think that he is, who ended up paying Albert Wilson? The Dolphins?
The Dolphins.
Maybe they will, because they've been foolish before for one of Patrick Mahomes' wide receivers. I'm talking about $3 million, $4 million, $5 million. So if DeMarcus Robinson says, look, I want to come back and I'll do it on a two-year $6-7 million contract, then I'd be interested. Anything more than that, though, we get back to the Patrick Mahomes and the Chris Jones conversation, and those guys are going to take up a lot of the money, which brings us to Mike Pinnell. Mike's a guy that I thought, once he hit the open market, because he's a Super Bowl champion, was going to have a few offers. He might end up a Chief also.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've always thought that Mike Pinnell was going to be back in Kansas City. He certainly wasn't going to be high when it comes to free agent priorities for a lot of teams, and I think you can sign him for a really good price. Like, I think you can get Mike Pinnell for 2 years, $6 million.
Done.
Which I think he takes that contract in Kansas City, and we just move on. Coming up momentarily, we'll go inside the mind of the machine, but I don't know if you guys heard this or not. They have postponed the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be until 2021.
I heard.
And typically we do the hot take Olympics where I give you guys three takes and we decide who gets the gold, silver, and bronze when it comes to it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough today for a full Olympics because I think there's one that pretty clearly deserves getting the gold medal.
And, you know, they're going to run an offense with, you know, Payton, you know, Sean Payton, his approach, but with a lot of what you're seeing out of Baltimore with Lamar Jackson, and I literally look at Lamar Jackson as he's the poor man's Taysom Hill. It's not the other way around. That's what we got with Taysom, and that's why the Saints are not messing around with the guy. I'm telling you right now, and he eventually will get taken care of.
Bob Fesco thinks that gentleman is too much of a homer. If you've come to the conclusion in watching Lamar Jackson and Taysom Hill that Taysom Hill is the rich man's version of Lamar Jackson, then you are crazy. And there's really no other way to break it down. I like Taysom Hill for what he is, but I don't know why. Maybe it's just boredom. Maybe we all been in the house too long. We were doing this before you were forced to be inside. I don't know why we're trying to turn Taysom Hill into something that he's never shown the ability to be. Taysom Hill is a fine weapon player. He's a fine gadget player. Now, typically, your gadget players are not quarterbacks, but that's exactly what Taysom Hill is. Correct me if I'm wrong. Drew Brees got hurt last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then New Orleans had the opportunity to make anybody they wanted their quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Who'd they pick?
Teddy Bridgewater.
They didn't pick Taysom Hill, right?
No.
And they kept using him as a gadget player, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how they kept using him? So then it's done. What are we doing here with Taysom Hill? He's not a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's fine for what he is. You can throw it to him. He can run the ball. You let him get a couple of throws in a game to throw the defense off. That's the kind of player that he is. He's 29 years old. He's going to be 30 by the time the season starts. We don't do this with any other player who has thrown the ball less than 10 times in their career by the time they're 30, and now we're trying to convince ourselves that they're a starting quarterback. This isn't just dumb. This is disrespectful to Lamar Jackson, who just won NFL MVP. This is the dumbest take of 2020. I'm sorry. It's the dumbest take of 2020.
I'll give it time. It's only March. I mean, Rick Ankiel was once a power-hitting outfielder, and then he became a pitcher, or maybe he was a pitcher and became a power-hitting outfielder. Anyway, so it's not completely unheard of in professional sports. I've never heard of a player like Taysom Hill actually ending up being a starting quarterback in the NFL. To your point about the Saints could have gone with him if they wanted to, in hindsight, didn't they make the right decision? Teddy Bridgewater went, what, 6-0, and he had Taysom Hill as one of his weapons. Wasn't that the right move to make?
No, I 1,000% agree. I'm just saying is at this point, if Taysom Hill was some untapped resource, we would have found out by the time he was 30 years old.
Do you think he's better than Mitchell Trubisky?
No, I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
I haven't seen Taysom Hill play quarterback except for very, very few and far between like everybody else. I can guarantee you he's a better quarterback than Mitchell Trubisky.
I think Mitch's problem is mental at this point.
I think his problem is he sucks at football.
Well, I don't think he's good by any means. We have absolutely no evidence that would suggest that Taysom Hill can throw the football. I'm not saying that Mitch is good at throwing the football. We at least have evidence that he can be good at it. Taysom can't throw the ball. They've never used him to throw the ball. He is a running back slash wide receiver. He is a hybrid type player. He is a player that's really cool to play with on Madden. We have absolutely no evidence that he can throw the football in the NFL. None. Not a single shred of evidence.
Is that true?
Would suggest
Has he put up no passing stats? Because every time that I watch him, you're right, he seems like he's a gadget-type player. But something tells me if NFL circles are making him out to be this quarterback, he's got some sort of numbers when it comes to throwing the football.
He's thrown the ball less than 10 times in his NFL career.
Oh, that busts that point pretty
quick. He's thrown 10 times in the NFL. 10.
Well, then we don't know he's a terrible quarterback because we haven't seen him throw the ball.
He is Antoine Randall-L. That's who he is.
What's the problem with Antoine Randall-L?
And Antoine L was a good possession receiver. I don't even think that's what Taysom Hill is. He's not even that. He's not even a good possession receiver. I just want us to be realistic about what Taysom Hill is. That's all I want us to do. Be realistic at what Taysom Hill is. That's it. I'm sorry. He has completed 6 passes in his career, and he has thrown 13. So my apologies.
Yeah. That's almost 50%.
So in his career, he is 6 for 13. When it comes to throwing passes in the NFL, and that's the guy that people think can start, and he is the rich. Lamar Jackson is a poor man's Taysom Hill. Okay, all right. Let's go inside the mind of the machine.
So I just saw a commercial for Burger King, and they're offering contactless delivery. And I turned to you and I said, hey, did you know that Burger King? And you cut me off and said, yeah, because I actually got it yesterday. What the hell is a contactless delivery from Burger King like?
So I actually went to Burger King after the show yesterday because I looked at the line at McDonald's and Popeyes, and the Burger King line had one person in it. So I was like, I just want something to eat really quickly. So what they're doing is when you order your food, you drive up to the drive-thru. They have like a tray. You put your debit card or money in the tray. They then take it back. They then hand you all of your food on a different tray, and then they pass it to you, and that is the contactless drive-through experience.
I thought they tossed it to you like the peanut guy at Kauffman Stadium, like from 10 feet away. Here, take your damn food. So you're talking about there's a piece of glass between? I've been doing that. I lived in Hyde Park for 2 years. Every gas station I went to had glass between me and the teller.
Yeah, that's contactless service.
Did you see the newest rapper to come down with the COVID-19?
Slim Thug?
Yeah. I'm sure you saw that. Slim Thug came down with the COVID-19, which of course begs the question, who's had the better rap career? Slim Thug, Paul Wall, or Mike Jones? Who? Mike Jones.
I mean, they really had all the same rap career, honestly?
No. Mike Jones disappeared. Paul Wall's still doing something. He played the CBE, the College Basketball Experience, to 72 people earlier this summer.
Yeah, I mean,
Slim Thug's still doing his thing, though, right?
No.
He's not?
Probably Paul Wall, but I don't really.
The People's Champ?
Yeah, the answer's probably Paul Wall, but I actually think that Mike at his peak was hotter than Paul Wall was.
He was huge at his peak.
Huge is strong.
He was huge at his peak.
He was popular. I don't know if he was
huge. Okay. You don't need the H. Huge.
Well, Drake is huge. Lil Wayne was huge.
Okay, he wasn't that huge.
Okay, well, hold on. He was never Wiz Khalifa.
No, he's never Wiz Khalifa.
He was never
either.
Big Sean.
This was right before.
He went Wale.
But this is right before everybody could see those guys on their cell phone and online and all that stuff. Like, Mike Jones is big in 03, I think.
He had a nice buzz. That's what he had. He had a nice buzz. He had a good 18-month run that ended very, very quickly.
Do you think he's still tipping on fofos?
I do think he is still doing that. Probably he still lives in Houston, Texas. That's kind of a birthright of passion.
He doesn't. The candy paint and all that. Will the Buccaneers make the playoffs this season with Tom Brady as their quarterback?
No.
No?
I don't think they're making the playoffs.
So will Tom Brady ever make the playoffs again? Now, let me rephrase the question.
You know I'm very anti, no.
Okay.
I don't think.
Rob.
No. You know where I sit on this as well.
He stinks.
Right. Well, he's going to three-hop Mike Evans on go routes.
He stinks.
All right.
He was 24-9. He was Alex Smith. If Alex Smith got traded to the Bucs, you have the Bucs in the playoffs? No.
No.
That's what Tom Brady is with a better name.
What's the worst Chiefs draft pick of all time, boys? I'm taking Jonathan Baldwin off the board.
I'll go off the board and I'll go Kavari Russell.
Who?
They spent the third round draft pick on a corner who never even broke camp with the team. So I'll go Kavari Russell. At least those other guys like eventually played for the team. Kavari Russell didn't even play. So I'll go with him.
What, Tyson Jackson?
Tyson Jackson, yeah.
Tyson wasn't bad. He just shouldn't have been a top 10 pick.
He was the number 3 overall pick. He was projected to be an early second round pick.
That's Scott Pioli's fault, though. Don't put that on Tyson. He was worth the 22nd pick.
Glenn Dorsey, who didn't turn out real good. There's a bunch of them. Percy Snow, remember that name?
I do remember Percy
Snow. That was way back in the day.
Sylvester Morris.
Ah, Sly Morris. That's a good one, too. So you're talking about the Olympics getting canceled. I was going over some of the events.
Postponed. It is postponed.
Postponed. Thank you. Postponed. I keep screwing that up. But there's a big difference.
Well, the tournament was canceled.
Thank you. Appreciate that. How many of these Olympic summer events have you ever tried? Have you ever tried your hand at equestrian?
No.
Do you know what it is?
I know it's a horse racing thing.
Mm-hmm. What about synchronized swimming? You ever been part of a synchronized swimming team?
I don't know how to swim.
Oh, yeah. You shouldn't try that then.
Yeah.
Synchronized
I don't know
or otherwise. Rob, you a big synchronized swimmer?
No.
No?
Not a big swim guy.
Handball? You ever guys ever played handball?
I have played handball
before.
You guys have both played handball.
I have not. I'd love to play handball. It looks fun every time I watch it.
I don't love to play handball, but I have played handball
before. Where did you play handball? The time you went to Russia?
In college.
In college, you and the boys got together, cracked open a couple of natural lights, and played handball?
One time. I mean, in college, isn't that the time to experiment and
That's
do things?
That's what they tell me, yeah.
So, yeah, one day I played handball. One day I played ultimate frisbee. I was like, this really ain't for me. It ain't really what I want to do with my life. I stopped. I played handball one time. I played what's that ball where you're in, like, the room? Racquetball? Is that it? Racquetball?
Yeah, racquetball.
Is it squash?
Yeah, maybe that's what you call
Whatever
it. I played that one time, too.
I believe that both racquetball and squash
the same
take
thing.
Place on a racquetball court.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. I don't know. But you guys know the game I'm talking
you
about.
You know it's a good way to quit racquetball? Get hit in the back of the head with the racquetball during a game of racquetball. Then you're done playing racquetball.
Yeah, I got no interest in it.
Hurts like hell, like a Randy Johnson fastball. A water polo? You ever played water polo? Oh, yeah, you can't swim.
I don't know how to swim.
tennis. You ever played table tennis?
I've played a lot of table tennis in my life.
Okay. We move on. Who had the better college career, Joe Burrow or Cam Newton?
Joe Burrow. Actually, you know what? Let me switch it to Cam for this reason. Cam played with way less talent and a worse coach than I think Joe Burrow did. I'm not saying that Burrow had the perfect situation and perfect scenario.
Go Tigers.
But I'm saying is Cam played on a team with only one other NFL player in the SEC. And that's tough to do, to have less talent. He basically took Missouri to the NCAA championship is what Cam Newton did.
It's impressive. And they're also called the Tigers. And they're also in the SEC. They're just unfortunately Auburn. Oh, it's a nasty.
I would say unfortunate. I would say the Auburn's had a really successful run.
Unfortunately for you, because you root for the Tigers in the SEC, and it's not Auburn. What's the nastiest alcoholic drink you've ever had?
Non-alcoholic or alcoholic?
Alcoholic. Drink? Nastiest booze you've ever drank.
Anything with gin.
Probably Hypnotic would probably be the answer.
Gets you drunk, though.
I mean, I took it was like drinking Listerine. I had no interest in it.
Everclear's pretty nasty. Who's more likely to be a starter next year in the NFL, Jameis or Cam?
Cam's not even close.
Celeb birthdays real quick. MC Hammer.
52.
55.
58. Eric Clapton.
62.
65.
75. One more. Christopher Walken.
73.
81.
77. That's all I got.
Back again tomorrow. It is The Drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.